All right, but every crew needs a captain. Let's go to our dizzy devil over Fun Fun Town. Captain Happy Panda in the Now Chopper.
Copy that, Bebop, and hello, folks. If you aren't swilling office coffee in the Cube Farm by now, you're probably one of the gas govers I'm looking down at here on the 666. From Moyle Heights to the Santa Baby off-ramp, it's a mess. All lanes crawling slow and go behind two sacred cows pulling the Ark of the Covenant in the show-off lane. Yeah, roger. Hearing now, the Edom intern is still being blocked by hostile natives in robes, diverting uncircumcised motorists onto the Goyim cutoff. So if you're not a helmet head, I would stay away from there.
Hi, welcome. Thanks for streaming us or downloading and listening on your computer or MP3 player. Thanks for bringing us along. I'm Austin Titchener, one-third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 88, The Fire Sign Theater. The Reduced Shakespeare Company has many influences. Warner Brothers cartoons, the Marx Brothers, the Goons, Monty Python, but only the Fire Sign Theater has living members willing to acknowledge us. Phil Proctor, who we met in 1992 when he and his lovely wife Melinda saw us at the Arts Theater in London, agreed to talk to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast about the Fire Sign Theater's formative years, and he explained to us the method to the Fire Sign's madness. At the beginning, how did the Fire Sign begin?
All right. Peter Bergman and I went to Yale together. He was in the class of 61. I was in the class of 62. We became acquaintances because he wrote the lyrics for two musicals that I starred in at the Dramat. Well, then he graduated a year before I did. And we met up again in New York. He was actually in the reserves at that time. Mm-hmm. And we had, you know, a brief encounter in New York when I was living in Greenwich Village and studying with Uta Hagen and doing off-Broadway shows. And then I did an off-Broadway show a couple of years later called The Amorous Flea, which is an adaptation of Molière's School for Wives. I won a Theatre World Award for that, which was presented to me by Paul Newman. It was really very exciting. And the show was, the producers wanted to take it to California. I'd never been to California. To Los Angeles. Never been to Los Angeles. At that time out here, there were anti-war protests, and the youth revolution was manifesting itself in demonstrations on the Sunset Strip and, you know, open drug usage, primarily marijuana, occasionally LSD. But the youth were, you know, and hell no, we won't go. Mm-hmm. So they tried to impose a curfew on the youth.
Good luck.
Really smart. And there was a big demonstration on the Sunset Strip. And during the demonstration, I sat down in front of a place called Pandora's Box on an open issue of the LA Free Press, and I have a copy of it downstairs, which a fan gave me. I sat down on Peter Bergman's face. That's how we reconnected. There was a picture of Peter Bergman interviewing some Vietnam War veterans. And the next day, I called up Peter Bergman, and I discovered that he was the Wizard of Oz on the Radio Free Oz show on KPFK, which was on from, God knows, 11 to 4 in the morning or something like that. And it was a counterculture phone-in talk show, kind of the first of its kind. And he was really quite famous. And I'd heard people talking about it. He said, oh, you should listen to this show. This is a really smart guy from Yale. They didn't know his name. He's called the Wizard of Oz. It turns out to be Bergman. So I go in, and I'm improvising with him and playing, and I meet David Osman, who's working there at the station, and I meet Phil Austin, who's working with his wife as well, Anna Lee, on the station, doing, like, drama. And one night, we did an improvisation called the Oz Film Festival, in which we all played various directors. Mm-hmm. I was Jean-Claude, a French director who was going to do the sequel to 2001. It was going to be 2002 OD, you know, and it was going to be a slightly different look at the future, you know. And I had all kinds of... And we showed adult movies on the radio, The Dentist, you know, and things like that. And we got calls from people saying, how dare you show pornographic movies on the radio? It was just, and we said, boy, we're on to something here. We are definitely on to something here. And Bergman also had set up that there was going to be this Oz Film Festival at this theater. And on the weekend, it was supposed to happen. Hundreds of people showed up to see it. You know, whoa, we got something going here. Something's happening here. It isn't exactly clear. We had discovered that we were all fire signs. I'm a Leo. Bergman's a Sagittarian. Osmond's a Sagittarian. And Osmond is an Aries, which is short for asshole. But... No, actually, you're Austin, too.
I'm an Aries as well.
Yeah, but, are you, too?
Yes.
Well, you know how stubborn you are. Yeah,
yes, we do.
Okay?
We are leaders of men, I prefer to be.
Yes, leaders of men, yes. Go find some and leave me alone. So, anyway, somehow all of these fiery signs have managed to be together for 40 years, you know, with different flameouts over time. But still, we're actually all still friends. We're all talking. We all love one another, and we're still... creating comedy together, although the platforms have changed so much. The terrain is so different. We can't do what we used to do. But right. So to go back in time now, back in time, there we are. Peter Bergman says, well, we're all fire signs. Let's call ourselves the Oz Fire Sign Theater. He said, fine. And we started improvising on a regular basis on the radio. We had an opportunity. We got famous enough, even just from that people wanted to see us. And so we did a couple of local performances. But then Austin connected with a producer named Gary Usher at Columbia Records. He's also no longer with us. He was hardly there even when we were working with him. But anyway, he was a great guy, and he did an astrology record. He really had his, you know, his finger on the pulse of New Age.
Right.
And Austin, who has a wonderful voice, as do you, he narrated it and did things with it. And Gary said, well, let's get, you know, let's do a Radio Free Oz record. And Bergman said, no, let's do an Oz Fire Sign Theater record. And he said, oh, sure, anything you want. Those were the days. Those are the days.
The makers of fantastic cigarettes, long in the leaf and short in the can, bring you another true story from the tattered casebook of Nick Danger, Third Eye. Let's join him now in the adventure we call
Cut Him Off at the Past.
The thing that had brought the Fire Sign Theater together was that all of us had a great love for radio and for the spoken word. And many of us also had musical abilities, a lot like you guys, and enjoyed writing and enjoyed improvising and enjoyed acting, particularly in the theater of the mind, where you didn't have to, you know, you didn't necessarily have to confront your audience.
Well, and the audience was required and allowed to create their own images.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Their own association.
Yeah, and they could tune in or tune out.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So we were on Pacifica Radio, KPFK, which is part of the Pacifica Radio chain, which is, you know, an avant-garde political network, FM network. And
still is.
Still is. Yeah. Still going strong. Yeah. But they, of course, did not restrict us in any way except for language, which is still ridiculous, but... That's the way it goes.
Two things are interesting. I mean, one is that this was during the heyday of the comedy album, you know, in the 60s, and then as it continued on into the 70s, but also that you guys all came to comedy not necessarily from comic backgrounds or comic training or not stand-ups. You were actors
and writers.
That's right. We didn't come through any of the comedy clubs or through any of the, at that time, any of the normal stand-up routes. In fact... None of us had ever done any stand-up, and
although improvisation was coming up with Nichols and May and the Second City and the Committee.
That's right, exactly. Yeah. Those were more our inspirations, and individually, my inspiration was the writing of Robert Benchley, which had that strange kind of walked that strange line between surrealism and documentary, you know, and Bob and Ray, who did the same thing with radio, and Ernie Kovacs, who did it on television.
With images and words.
Oh, yeah. And Mad Magazine, which, and all of those EC comic books, which exploded the storytelling form, and especially Mad parodied the very comic book itself, you know, and just burst out of the panels. So those are my influences, and we found David Osmond was a poet, And Phil Austin was a musician and actor, like me. And Bergman was primarily a... he had the gift of gab. He still does. Very, very smart. And a good writer. Yeah. Very good writer. Yeah. Very good comic mind. So we got together, and we what we were basically doing was we were transcending and expanding the art of the put-on, or the send-up, as they call it in England.
Right.
And we would establish situations and characters for ourselves and then go with it and then open whatever we were doing to phone calls from the gullible public.
The great unwashed.
The great unwashed. But, of course, you didn't have to smell them.
Because they, even better.
They were at home, you know, hey, man, you know. And that gave us the, encouraged us, if you will, and gave us the confidence to feel that we could do this on a mass level by parodying from the inside the culture of communication and the culture of America and the society.
So in the live radio, you were obviously improvising and busking, you know, but then when you were writing the albums, how scripted were they? How much room did you have, give yourselves for improvisation?
We scripted them fairly heavily, and we found that we wrote well together, and we would write in, maybe you guys write the same way, we would write by basically utilizing our improvisational powers to break up the other members of the team. And we would write all this stuff down. David Osman at that time would be sitting at a typewriter with carbon paper, and that's how we did it. We'd type it out, and then we'd revise it. But when we took the stuff into the actual recording studio, it would burst apart. It became a blueprint.
Right.
A template, a lot like making a fun movie or something, you know, or doing theater work where the writers sit out there, you're making changes.
Right.
So we were free. It was just us.
Yeah.
We were producing it ourselves. We had written it ourselves. We were playing all the parts except for the girls. We bring the girls to sing and look at, and in essence, a lot of material was written in the studio. We also had created the concept of underscoring and overscoring, of multi-tracking, putting in background, like Mad Magazine.
Right.
Little, what's in that panel there? Oh, look at that, so funny in there, and another. But that's how we worked, and that's why the albums are so have so many layers to them.
Thank you. Hey, Reagan. It's never too late to fade away. Oh, hey, Reagan.
Hi, I'm Amy Moorhead. I was the choreographer for the Reduced Shakespeare Company's Complete Millennium Musical Abridged, now known as Western Civilization, the Complete Musical Abridged, because, you know, the millennium is so 2000. And you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Give me immortality or give me death. That's the motto here at Ralph's Ball Sports, new and used body shop in the city of the future. Hi, friends, Ralph Sportsman here to tell you that everybody must die, but you don't have to be there when it happens.
What are some of the other characters that our Reduced Shakespeare Company fans would recognize you as? Ralph Spoilsport.
Well, I guess the most famous piece that we did, the one that seemed to have the most traction with people, although our fans would argue with me about this. They'd say, don't crush that dwarf, hand me the pliers. Oh, that changed my life. You know, how can you be in two places at once? You're not anywhere at all. Oh, that changed both of my lives, you know. I think we're all bozos on this bus. Well, I'm still a bozo on this bus. And how did you guys know that all this was going to happen? Well, in answering, like, what might be the most popular one, Nick Danger, Third Eye. Okay?
Okay.
In the case of whatever it was. Mm. 666, case number 666.
Right.
I don't remember what it was called.
That's a great title, though. The case of whatever it was.
Case of whatever it was. Nick Danger, Third Eye, which is on the flip side of how can you be in two places at once?
Right.
Well, I'm Rocky Rococo, you stupid fool. And for those people who know Nick Danger, you know, they detest me, and I hate you too. You know, I'm also was Nancy, you know.
And everyone knew her as Nancy.
Well, and I'll throw in my two cents for favorite. It's the giant rat of Sumatra is my favorite among all of my favorites.
Hemlock Stones. I played Hemlock Stones in that. Yes, that's a very interesting album. That was a fun album. And the way we evolved a lot of these albums was by doing live performance. Yeah. You're asking about our writing process. When we were really at the height of our success in the late 60s and early 70s, we could perform pretty much anywhere we wanted to here in Los Angeles. We performed at a place, we did a live radio show at the Magic Mushroom over in Ventura, and we would do skits as the Fireside Theater, very Goon Show style skits for people who know that wonderful English comedy radio show. And we evolved material there in front of a live audience, inspired by the works of the Marx Brothers, who used to do the same thing. They'd work out their material up in Santa Barbara at a beautiful theater up there and then refine it and then put it in front of the cameras.
Yeah.
They knew that the stuff worked, you know. Well, we did the same thing. We evolved a lot of our material. And your favorite album, The Giant Rat of Sumatra, came out of a stage show originally as well. That we then, you know, we'd say, well, what really worked?
Mm-hmm.
Dwarf was built that way. It was called the TV set.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole premise was changing channels, was channel surfing. Bozos did not come out of any live performance. Bozos came out of our head onto the vinyl at the time. Certain aspects of it, certain characters, certain skits, certain ideas were drawn from the work we've been doing in front of audiences.
Our labor's now completed. The great defective Hemlock Stones and I, his patient doctor and biographer, returned directly to our lodgings at 99 Bakersfield Street. Thankful that for tonight at least, Londoners might sleep forever under a comforting blanket of thick English industrial fog.
Splendid.
That's it, Stones. Splendid. The adventure of the swollen sock.
It's quite commercial. They'll eat it up, old bean.
Yes, it takes care of last month's rent, too, you see.
By the by, have we eaten up all those old beans, Flotsam? I'm famished.
We can pay this month's rent, you know, and have a little left over for food if you'll just tell me a second story.
What am I, a second story man? If it's adventures you want, make them up yourself. Look, here, in the London Exaggerator, it's full of them.
What? Hey,
man coughs up towel in Brussels. Yankee pig nut swindle shocks Parliament. Sultan insulted in melee. Giant green cheese stolen. Aha!
Oh, what's wrong, Stones?
I saddled my pipe.
The Fireside Theater dabbled in Shakespeare as well, too, at one point.
We did. Yes, we did. The Fireside Theater, early in our career, in the first year of our time together, had connections to the Renaissance Pleasure Fair because David Osman had been married to a lady named Bettina, who, with her new husband, started the Renaissance Pleasure Fairs out here.
I think we might have met her along our paths, because, you know, the Renew Shakespeare Company started at Ren Fairs as well.
We did, okay. Yeah. And so did the Flying Karamazov Brothers.
That's right.
All right?
That's right.
Wow, we're in some pretty good company.
Well, and I remember you came and saw us when we were at the Arts Theater. You and Melinda came and saw us when we were at the Arts Theater in 92, and you sent your card backstage, and we all just about flipped.
Wow.
Because we went, oh my God, it's that guy from that thing. We have all of his records. But you said at that time, which I still remember and found it very flattering, that you thought we were sort of carrying on the baton of the Fireside Theater, which was flattery and overstatement, but I love it.
Oh, no, not hardly, no. What you guys were doing, what you're still doing, is compressing something comedic and surreal into an entertaining presentation that is much deeper than it appears to be on the surface, right?
Right.
You know? You use the vaudeville, the burlesque, the broad strokes, but what you're saying and what you're doing and where you're taking the audience is a real exercise for the brain, for the mind. And that's exactly what we discovered, that not only did we create kind of synapses between ourselves, between the four minds, which I know you do with the people you work with, as do the Flying Karamazovs, but you hone your skills in such a way that you can throw so much stuff together and present it in such a seemingly harmless fashion. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, they're doing a parody of a radio commercial for, you know, beer. Oh, right. That's what they're doing. But no, we're not doing that. We're subverting the entire government. You know, we're telling people to throw their chains off and be free. Mm-hmm. We're telling them to smoke marijuana. You know, we're telling them all kinds of interesting things about finding themselves. But what we're also doing is if you listen to the records and if you experience like your shows, you come out, your brain is stimulated. You feel energized, mm-hmm. because I feel that what we're really doing is helping the brain to work in an unconscious fashion, the same way dreams happen, by making connections, right. by actually rewiring the brain in certain ways,
right.
and exercising it in psychedelic manner, yeah. in a psychedelic manner, so that it can manifest ideas. It's more open to using the entire instrument that God has given us, instead
right.
of compartmentalizing it or strictly living in the right side of the brain or the left side of the
brain. And it's open to discovery of that improvisational technique of
yeah.
just following the mistake and seeing what happens.
Right. And you do see things differently when, you know, it's like viewing great art. You do see things differently when you walk out of the gallery.
Mm.
You know, you feel slightly high and life is more vivid. The skies are bluer and the clouds are whiter. So that's what happens when you experience really good comedy, even really good stand-up,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's why these art forms exist, because they're platforms for people, the artist, to convey ideas, but also to stimulate people to see things in a more liberated way and to feel things more personally and to live more personally and with more confidence in their own sense of humor, if you will.
Wow.
Objectivity from oppressive reality and propaganda.
Well, that's as great a manifesto for art as I've heard ever. Anything you want to say to the Reduced Shakespeare Company listeners?
I just encourage you to stay as reduced as possible. Stay small and keep listening.
I think that's good advice. Thank you, Phil.
You're welcome.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your feedback or emails to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com or leave us a message on our MySpace page at myspace.com/reducedshakespeare. You can also find us at facebook.com. Thanks as always to webmaster Matt Rippey, ripsite.co.uk, semi-retired Green Bay Packers quarterback Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Catherine Martin. No reason or relation. It's just random. Special thanks to Amy Moorhead and to Phil Proctor and the Fire Sign Theater. You heard excerpts from their albums Give Me Immortality or Give Me Death, How Can You Be in Two Places at Once When You're Not Anywhere at All, Fighting Clowns, and The Tale of the Giant Rat of Sumatra, all of which are available on CD from firesigntheater.com. Thanks very much for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 88/264th of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.